You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, July 31st, 2017.
I mean, we're talking enormous amounts of dollars that ultimately our service system, which is already challenged to make ends meet and with the existing budgets, will be incapable to respond to that.
If everyone expects this particular...
WFHB correspondent Arjun Balasandran spoke with area experts on what an Obamacare repeal would look like in Indiana.
Not going to happen.
And also coming up in the next half hour, Olivia Ness from Movement Exchange talks about volunteer dance instruction. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Cook Medical Group pledged $22,000 in order to keep the Shalom Center open on the weekends. This move comes after Mayor John Hamilton's speech last Thursday, in which he presented steps the city of Bloomington plans to take toward tackling homelessness and drug abuse. During his talk at the public library, Hamilton stated that the Safety, Civility, and Justice Task Force would recommend the Shalom Center expand its hours to include weekends. It was projected that the city government, county government, and the private sector could split the estimated cost of $65,000. Executive Director of the Shalom Center, Forrest Gilmore, said in an interview today that he views the recommendation and Cook's pledge as a step forward.
The power of this is that it's both a humane and an effective response. People do need more shelter opportunities on the weekends. They do need a safe place to go and to be. They do need a more centralized. And we also believe it'll really help with reducing incidents and crime in our community.
Gilmore said the bulk of Cook Medical Group's donation will go towards hiring weekend staff. While he predicts that this development will be beneficial, Gilmore said he hopes that the community won't expect too much from the Shalom Center.
If everyone expects this particular advance to solve all the challenges with poverty and crime and such downtown, that's certainly not going to happen.
Mayor Hamilton said the expansion of hours at the Shalom Center was one of many approaches the city is undertaking to combat homelessness and drug abuse.
The extended hours at Shalom will provide additional services through the weekend, including hunger relief and life essentials, crisis casework, continued overnight shelter at a friend's place, street outreach, and the rapid rehousing work. Homelessness, hunger, addiction, and mental illness do not take days off, so we think it's important that task force recommended 7 days a week. We're going to try it with funding for 1 year of these extended hours. We don't know if this is the right answer. We know it was recommended by the task force. We understand also that the presence of any organization providing these kinds of services near residential neighborhoods brings its own challenges. So with the extended service hours, we will be increasing police foot patrols in the area to monitor activity and protect the safety, civility, and justice for those who reside in the area and minimize any illegal activity.
Hamilton said the city is also putting together a team to disseminate information to the public.
We're going to form a metrics development team. Exciting. In order to make informed decisions, our many community stakeholders need access to timely, accurate, useful information. To accomplish this, the new metrics development team will be developing metrics to measure current conditions, effectiveness of programming, activity trends, data on homelessness, overdoses, drug arrests, other metrics they determine to be pertinent as we collectively seek to improve our safety, civility, and justice. Good data leads to informed and better decisions. I've requested several city staff members, including Beverly Callender Anderson, Police Chief Mike Dekoff, Safe and Civil City Director Rafi Hassan, Parks and Rec Director Paula McDevitt, Innovation Director Tom Miller, to help develop these metrics. We know how important the work of Monroe County government is and the data to which they have access. So Director of Monroe County Health Department Administrator Penny Caudill has also agreed to serve. County Commissioner Amanda Barge, who you hear from soon, has also pledged the county's cooperation and participation. So additional representatives may be joining this team. We appreciate all of their help.
County Commissioner Amanda Barge outlined some of the issues Monroe County is struggling with.
Our community is at a crossroads. While on one hand we have a thriving arts community, we have great restaurants and a culture of people who care about each other, we also have an overcrowded jail, an opioid epidemic, and residents who feel scared and even sometimes angry that we aren't doing enough to solve our problems. Whether it be a hungry family, a new mom with an opiate addiction, or the police officer with secondary traumatization because he has watched too many people overdose, I feel the community's pain and concern, and I know that we as government have a duty to address that.
To address those concerns, Mayor Hamilton said the city will expand its internet-based services.
Two new internet-based resources are being developed. This is also recommended. One, a homeless services webpage embedded in the city website, providing one-click information for those in our community addressing or experiencing homelessness. Links will provide access to services integrated available in the community to assist with housing and related resources. Once the page is up, a public information campaign will inform potential users of its availability. Also, a safety, civility, and justice website. A goal of a standalone website to connect and inform people in the public about initiatives designed to make our city more safe, civil, and just. It will connect new homeless services webpage and help organize community efforts. It will help identify and feature stories of people who are working to address these challenges, institutions, individuals, how to get involved in that work if you care to, organizations like CASA featured with links to their work, and how to get involved. We hope this simple, easy to navigate platform can help residents stay informed about what's going on and get involved to help address these issues.
Hamilton has also announced during Thursday's press conference that the city will be implementing a new community coordinating council.
I will be inviting a group of high-level representatives from key stakeholders like Monroe County Government, Indiana University, IU Health, Centerstone, the Community Foundation, our business community, and others to join together to look at these issues holistically and work closely together to implement best practices, using the data gathered by the metrics team to inform us. By opening these doors using data, joining with representatives from our key community resources, I believe we can more effectively and efficiently, without duplicating services, bring about the reality of a safer, more civil, and more just community.
Thursday's press conference did not address steps the city is taking to combat the ongoing opioid epidemic in southern Indiana. Hamilton said those issues will be addressed in full at the first annual South Central Opioid Summit, a free one-day event hosted by members of the county government and experts in the field. The summit takes place on September 28th.
The Office of the City Clerk is now accepting applications to fill a seat appointed by the City Council on the Environmental Commission. The Environmental Commission is an advisory group which counsels the city on how its operations can preserve and enhance Bloomington's environment. Commissioners also participate in city planning processes and research pertinent environmental topics. Prospective applicants can find more information on the city's website at bloomington.in.gov/onboard. All board and commission meetings are free and open to the public. Potential applicants are advised to attend a meeting before applying.
The lobbying organization that played a major role in passing the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in 2015 is making plans for an August conference. The Indiana Family Institute is basing the conference off the Conservative Political Action Conference, an annual event in Washington, D.C., conducted by the American Conservative Union. Indiana's version will be called ICON, short for Indiana Conservative. Kurt Smith, president of the Family Institute, wrote in a recent Indiana Business Journal column that the organization's aim was to, quote, convene the brightest minds in politics and thought to cast a vision for the conservative movement in Indiana, unquote. Key topics at the conference are to include effective tactics for opposing marijuana legalization and fighting the opioid addiction crisis with community and faith-based organizations. Smith also wrote in his column that there would be a focus on how conservatives can maintain their, quote, distinctiveness, unquote. Vice President Mike Pence and Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson are among the invited guests, as well as seven Republican members of Congress. ICON will be at the Sheraton Indianapolis Hotel at Keystone Crossing on August 26th. At the conference are Republican Representative Jim Banks and the conservative advocacy group Americans for Prosperity.
Mayor John Hamilton urged community members at a press conference this afternoon to pursue solar energy options as a state deadline approaches. The press conference kicked off the second phase of Solarize Bloomington, an initiative purportedly designed to increase the amount of solar energy generated by homes and businesses. Hamilton said phase two is an expansion of the project, which will extend to surrounding counties, including Greene, Morgan, and Owen counties. It is also a more urgent expansion than the previous phase. Senate Bill 309, passed earlier this year, created a December 31st deadline for people hoping to receive financial incentives for investing in solar. Installation of solar panels may be expensive for some people, despite significant drops in the price of the panels, but homeowners can be credited by utility companies for the extra energy they contribute to the power grid. But after the end of this year, the financial incentives to pursue solar will lessen. Cliff Burke, a volunteer with the Solar Indiana Renewable Energy Network, an organization the city has worked with during both phases, explains the deadlines the state has created.
If people were to go ahead and put a system in after December 31st, let's say anytime in 2018, they would not get the full 30-year benefit, but they would get a 15-year benefit. They would be grandfathered for until 2032. So if they wait until 2019, they are still grandfathered until 2032. Same thing for 2020. But you see, the time frame for them to recoup their investment is shorter the longer you wait. And after 2022, if you put your system in by 2022, you get your benefit until 2032. After 2022, you don't get any net metering. So the pressure is on not only those who want to go solar, but the installers in an effort to try to get the systems in as fast as they can.
Burke says he worries about the loss of interest people may have in solar energy. With the passage of Senate Bill 309, the financial credit to homeowners could drop from 11 cents per kilowatt hour of solar energy given to the grid to around 4 cents.
So instead of a one-for-one exchange for your excess power, which is what net metering is all about, you'll pay full price for the power you use. You won't get full credit for the power that's surplus to you on any particular day. What you'll get instead is 25% more than the wholesale cost. So in numerical terms, you'll be buying power from the grid at 11 or 12 cents a kilowatt hour. And if you push power to the grid, they will pay you about 4 cents a kilowatt hour instead of giving you credit for the 11 or 12 cents that net metering people currently get.
Like Hamilton, Burke says he hopes people will continue to invest in solar energy for the sake of the environment and of other people.
Everybody who does invest in solar panels is doing not only themselves a favor, but also helping their neighbors and anybody downwind of a power plant. Because, like me, I've got dozens, if not hundreds, of cousins in Ohio, and if they're breathing cleaner air because Indiana is not burning as much coal, then you know, my cousins aren't going to thank me, but they're going to appreciate having cleaner air to breathe and maybe fewer trips to the doctor to treat their asthma.
More information about Phase 2 of Solarize Bloomington can be found at tinyurl.com/solarizebloomington2. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. After the Republican effort to repeal and replace Obamacare died on the floor of the U.S. Senate last week, WFHB correspondent Arjun Balasandram spoke with experts in healthcare to understand what a repeal would look like for Indiana.
The failed Republican health care bill proposed cuts in Medicaid coverage, which family advocates say would have had dire consequences for Hoosier families. Cindy Johnson is a mother of three in Bloomington and has an 11-year-old autistic son, Aiden, and a 9-year-old daughter, Rebecca, who is living with Down syndrome. Johnson told WFHB last week that she was worried about the impact of proposed Medicaid cuts on her children. Johnson said the Republicans' skinny repeal of the Affordable Care Act would make Hoosier families like hers, which rely on Medicaid, lose their health care coverage.
I really honestly hate to think about what would happen to so many families. I know for our family, it would spell financial ruin because the lifetime cap imposed by private insurance would be lifted, and we would have long since passed or surpassed that lifetime cap with my daughter's care. So my whole family would lose their health coverage. We would no longer have health coverage through my husband's employer. So that's another piece altogether that honestly keeps me up at night.
Derek Nord is the director of Indiana University's Institute on Disability and Community. Nord said that over 10 million non-elderly people with disabilities rely on Medicaid, and cuts would negatively affect Indiana.
This cutting of Medicaid has major implications. Here in Indiana, we're talking like I said, you know, there are 20,000 or so people with disabilities, with significant disabilities that rely on Medicaid for long-term services and supports. That's a major concern of mine. I think our service system of long-term services and supports, which we should be proud of, I think will be damaged greatly by these kind of reductions. Medicaid provides services, it allows services for people with significant disabilities across the lifespan. By those kind of reductions, we're talking about the consequences here are challenges that are going to have to be faced by the education systems, by our human service systems, and likely the burden will be thrown on the shoulders of family members.
Indiana is one of six states in the country that operates their Medicaid expansion programs through federal waivers. Johnson, who is a health information specialist at Family Voices Indiana and the founder of Down Syndrome Family Connection, said she worries about the services her daughter would lose if the waivers are scrapped.
Through the waiver, she receives behavior services. She receives respite. So I take respite for a couple of hours on Wednesday, and I go watch my other daughter play softball. She likes to play softball. She's in the league for the city. And so what a wonderful gift to be able to do that. If Rebecca's with me, I can't do that. She's an eloper. She takes off. She's a wanderer and runs a lot. And so I have to I literally would be chasing her the whole time and just trying to keep her off the road. And I wouldn't be able to watch my other daughter play softball and do what she enjoys. I wouldn't be able to show her the attention that she needs and requires as a kid. So respite then allows me to do that because she has a trained person that comes and helps her and plays with her and even gives her dinner and helps her make dinner. And then I go and play with my or watch my other daughter.
The Congressional Budget Office estimated the Republican attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare would have cut $772 billion from Medicaid. Nord said that would result in 14 million people losing their Medicaid coverage by 2026.
A recent study from the Kaiser Foundation, Family Foundation, stated that $4.4 billion with the shift in the health care bill, the existing health care bill the health care bill that's being pitched and potentially voted on today, there will be a reduction of $4.4 billion to the state of Indiana. Now, as far as Medicaid goes, it's lower than that, but just for people with disabilities, we're talking about a system of $1.4 billion about related to Medicaid that touches some people with the most significant disabilities, and that imagine a 25% cut to that. I mean, we're talking enormous amounts of dollars that ultimately our service system, which is already challenged to make ends meet and with the existing budgets, will be incapable to respond to that and provide the same level of support for people that need it.
Nord said alternative steps exist should the state choose to exercise them if a future health care bill replaces or repeals Obamacare.
Alternative ways of getting maybe filling that gap in services and supports are for the state to fill what would ultimately be a budgetary hole to provide the same level of supports. And to do that, the state would need to either increase their taxes to the citizens here in Indiana or shift dollars or some combination of this or shift dollars from other important services like, say, education. And I think, again, let me put this into context. Some of the cuts being proposed for Indiana schools, we're talking right now there is upwards of $12 million, $12.1 million in 2016 that went to schools, Medicaid dollars that went to schools to provide those services and supports.
Johnson said should Obamacare be repealed or replaced, families dependent on Medicaid, like hers, are dependent on people speaking out.
We're going to have to be in contact. We're going to have to talk with Governor Holcomb. We're going to have to talk with the powers that be in our state and talk about preserving certain funding levels despite or improving how those services are delivered, not just cuts. We can't just have, I mean, the cuts and caps that are coming down from the federal level that are happening or could potentially happen because of these bills, that is going to mean a state funding cut of federal dollars. When that happens and when there's less money to serve these populations, when that happens, folks are going to have to be arm wrestling to figure out where that money gets allocated. And I think we're going to have to get family input on how best to deliver waiver services, how to stretch those Medicaid dollars, and we're going to have to talk.
Current measures to repeal and replace Obamacare were voted down in the Senate last week, although it's uncertain if the fight over Obamacare and cuts to Medicaid is over. For WFHB, this is Wes Martin.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
It's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, I'm Olivia Ness, and I volunteer with Movement Exchange at Indiana University. So Movement Exchange is an organization that sends out volunteers to different places in Bloomington to teach dance classes and movement activities to children who may not have that option in their own daily lives. We're able to bring it to them as college students. There is such a mission of seeing an opportunity to make a difference in a child's life and to give them the option to move and to express themselves through movement when perhaps that option wouldn't have been available to them outside of school or outside of their own sort of home environment. When I was little, you couldn't be a dancer because if you were, you were a ballerina. Like, that was it. And when I got to college, it was like, I could be whoever I wanted. Like, I did ballroom, I did salsa, I did all sorts of that stuff because I could, because it was there. Having that availability is precious, and that if you don't take advantage of that, then maybe you're missing the opportunity to express that part of yourself that maybe you don't even know is there. That's very philosophical, but it's fun to think that way, and fun to think that maybe I could be a dancer, or maybe I could be someone who's really good at tag, or like really good at teaching something, or going out out and using my voice for good. That is really important, especially for kids. I learned about Movement Exchange about 2 years ago. Up until that point, I had just sort of been dancing through clubs and through IU just sort of as fun. I thought I would try out a few different sort of dance clubs, and I really liked dancing, but I didn't know how to sort of fit it into my life in a more like feasible way other than just sort of learning the techniques myself. And so I learned about Movement Exchange and how it could help me fit service and dancing into my life in one compact, perfect package. I mean, it's given me such a power to make a difference and to reach out to children who might not have the opportunity to express themselves, and going through college the way any other student does, and not seeing children ever, you know, because you're just surrounded by 20-year-olds all the time. But to sort of interact with pretty much the same kids every time. I mean, I see Olivia every week. You know, you make a relationship with these kids, and you get to know them and their personalities. And to not have that would be kind of weird at this point. And I don't think of myself as a dancer. I really probably never will, but I enjoy it. I'm definitely more confident in myself having that option to dance and to teach dance or to teach a game or a movement. Before I joined, I probably never would have thought I'd be like commanding a room of children. Never, ever. It's given me confidence. It's given me a reason to dance. And I think that's really amazing. My goal when I come here is to direct them and keep them focused on one thing. And maybe that doesn't work. Maybe it doesn't. But in the end, like I said, if they have fun, I've done a good job.
Thanks for listening. I'm Olivia.
And I'm Olivia with Movement Exchange.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. Coming up on August 13th is the third annual Bloomington Blues and Boogie Woogie Piano Festival. Volunteers will keep the event running smoothly or assist with educational activities happening on August 14th. All volunteers will get an opportunity to view and listen to the live music performances. The IU Office of International Development invites you to take part in a unique opportunity to engage with Indonesian high school students and adult educators who will be visiting the United States this August. Host families are needed August 12th through 26th. And finally, Bloomington Worldwide Friendship matches local residents with international students and scholars, not as host families, but to help these students learn about the Bloomington community and American culture through shared activities like planning meals together, hiking in state parks, and attending community events. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
This has been the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Lindsay Jones and Cole Stinson. Our feature was produced by Cole Stinson.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Michael Glab. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programs online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned now for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.